Welcome to our show today. I'd like to welcome Alex Sabag onto the Yoga Therapy Hour podcast. And she and I just had a really fascinating discussion. And I think you're really going to love it, especially if you're a yoga teacher or a yoga therapist or an Ayurvedic practitioner. Alex talks about how important it is to have a daily practice that provides the foundation of our life for when, as she says, you get hit by the 2x4. And it's not if life is going to become challenging, it's when it does. So this idea of let's get ourselves in order, let's prepare ourselves for the ups and downs of life. And I love that she said, when things are going well, we never want to see change. But when things are not going well, we actually do want to see change. And we don't have a lot of control over either one of them. We just have to prepare to do the best we can. So we start off talking about her story of her 33rd birthday, finding out that the person she was in love with was diagnosed with brain cancer. And that 5-year journey really changed her for the better. Was incredibly difficult, and she'll tell you all about her story and all the lessons that she learned along the way. And then at the end of this episode, we get into some special advice for yoga teachers and yoga therapists who are out there trying to make a living. Alex has been there, she's been doing it, and what she said about making a living in yoga is not that far off of what she said about preparing yourself for the day when someone in your life ends up having cancer, that actually we can prepare very similarly, whether we are trying to deal with a challenge or whether we are trying to become our best self and get out there and make a living teaching yoga. So I think you're really going to enjoy this episode. I know I did. I agree with almost every single thing she said. My heart was like, yes, yes, yes. So let's go meet Alex, and I'll see you on the other side. Welcome to the Yoga Therapy Hour, Season 8. At the end of 2024, I was reflecting on our 2.5 years together. Each and every season, I want to bring something new, something fresh and interesting. So in Season 8, starting in January of 2025, we are going to tell stories. I'm asking you, yes, you, to come on the podcast and tell your story of health, healing, and beyond as it applies to yoga, yoga therapy, and Ayurveda. How did these things help you to heal on the physical level, chronic level, the mental or emotional level, or even spiritual level? Maybe all of the above. So come on down. It's your turn to be on the podcast, and we would love to have you join us in 2025 telling your story of how you healed. Welcome, Alex. Thank you for being on the Yoga Therapy Hour today.
Thanks for having me, Amy. It's great to be here.
Where are you located in the world?
I am in San Diego. So beautiful sunny day at the beach, a little chilly by Southern California standards, but can't complain.
What is chilly to you?
Oh, probably about 52.
Oh yeah. My. Okay. Well, I'm in Minnesota and we were 17 below zero yesterday. So
that's what real women are made of out there.
Well, I wanted to start with that. You know, I was reading your book, Soul Dive. Wonderfully, beautifully written, My Journey into the Deep. And I read that we are both from Iowa, which is a crack up. And then we both moved to Chicago. And then we both moved to California. I feel like we kind of have some twin lives going on here. So
yeah,
it's kind of interesting. Do you have any connection to Iowa? Do you ever go back?
I do. My parents live there half the year. So in the summer, I usually go for a bit to visit them. They're in West Des Moines, which is, not in the house I grew up in anymore, but very close. And it's still a sweet place to visit.
Isn't it? You know, when I came back here to Southern Minnesota, which is very close to where I grew up in Northern Iowa, it smells a certain way, the rain, the earth. There's just a feeling. It's how the clouds move across the sky. It's just so different than California.
It is. There is a sweetness about the Midwest that I do miss. The value system, the people, the honesty, the authenticity and kindness. Not that those things don't exist in California, but the Midwest is just known for that sort of richness in who we are. So whenever I connect with Midwest people, especially on the West Coast, I'm like, oh, you gotta like hang on to that a little bit. I miss the seasons. I miss the snow. I lived in Chicago for 18 years. My winter collection is solid and it's collecting dust at the moment.
Wow,
So,
I can imagine.
yeah, any opportunity to go back and just kind of relish in whatever the seasons are is always appealing to me.
All right. So I've been reading your book, Soul Dive, and I don't know where you want to start with your story. I'm going to let you decide that, but it's riveting and challenging, and your heart hurts. So where do you want to begin with your story? Something fell apart, but yoga has helped you bring yourself back together. So I'll let you start.
Well, thank you for reading it. First of all, that means a lot. It's been something that's been in the works since I was in my 20s, long before my 2x4 moment kind of came in and totally changed the trajectory of my life. I knew a book was going to be in me more for like the lighthearted moments. So, yes, it's deep, it's raw, it's authentic, and will bring you to your knees. But moments later, you're kind of lifted back up, and hopefully, you can laugh with me along the way of, some of the things that I experienced and learned. But I never wrote it in my 20s or really early 30s. I just, for whatever reason, was not energetically pulled to tell my story at that time. And I think the reason why is it lacked depth and relatability. And what transpired on my 33rd birthday, for good or bad, gave me that anchor point where I could really like drop into the human experience and relate, not because everybody experienced the same thing I did, but because when we do go through those super life-altering moments, we really feel what fear and grief and sadness and anxiety are like in the physical body, in the mind. It takes over your life for a certain period of time, and we have all been there. And I think it's, kind of one of those things. Life is a great equalizer when it comes for you in the way that it will, because nobody is immune. It's coming. I don't know in what shape or form, but man, I hope we're all ready, right? And that's part of the message in the book too. But for me, on my 33rd birthday, my boyfriend was diagnosed with terminal brain cancer. And I had just flown home from Spain. He was in Chicago. We were living together. He was on his way to the ER while I was on my way from Barcelona to O'Hare. And I was like, wow, it's crazy. Like, I'll meet you at the hospital. We can, figure it out. And he got discharged with a migraine cocktail, and we thought all was fine. So we wake up the next morning and we're having coffee and getting started on my birthday. And the emergency room calls and says, you have to come back for an emergency brain MRI, which is a phone call nobody wants to receive, of course. So we went back. And from there, it was diagnosis. It was hospitalization, it was biopsy, it was sort of learning, your life changes in a second, but then you learn how much in the days to follow.
Can we
Yeah,
just stop there for a moment?
sure.
Because I think this is what our audience listening will relate to, that you don't know when these moments are going to hit and then life is never going to be the same. You're sitting there, you've just come home from Spain, had a great time, sitting there having coffee and 2x4. I know we've all had those moments that we didn't see coming. And, looking back now, it seems to me that that's all the more reason to feel like every single moment in life is so precious because we don't know when it's going to change in an instant. Do you have any thoughts about that?
Yeah, we do and we don't. I think one of the things we learn in yoga is this practice of non-attachment. And when things go bad in life, or impermanence, I should say, non-attachment separate, impermanence also another lesson, but both really, they kind of go hand in hand. When things are going poorly, impermanence is good news. Great. I'm not going to be here forever. The season will lift, like ride the wave. When things are really good, and then like that we are here to ride this sort of wave of life, that's a tougher pill to swallow. But I think we may not know what's going to happen, but we know things are going to come up. We know it's not always going to be rainbows and butterflies. And if this is the first time you're hearing that, I'm really sorry, but we're going to tell you the truth. Like, it ain't pretty and it's tough and it requires a lot of grit. I say in every book I sign, with grit, grace, and gratitude, that's it. It's equal parts grit and grace. It's hard. And we can develop practices, yoga or otherwise, that create more equanimity in our own lives so that when these moments do hit, it's not so tragic. We're not slapped down so hard we're, starry-eyed and dizzy for months or years. We certainly are going to get knocked down and lose our breath, but we can come back to it. For me, I love yoga. I always have. It's been a practice that I've leaned on for years. But truly, even though I own a yoga studio, I actually don't care if somebody rolls out a yoga mat ever in their life. What I care is they find something that's meaningful and it becomes routine. And this is what I call loosely the practice: walking, different forms of meditation, gardening, cooking, a quiet time in your infrared sauna. I really don't care as long as you repeat it and you drop into that space really daily. Because what happens is this 2x4 moment hits, and then you have something to rest back on. You can still get out of bed because that little piece of time in the morning has become so sacred to you. And if you take nothing away from this conversation, it's this: get into practice, because I didn't have it. So when I'm sitting in the waiting room, and yes, my boyfriend was my boyfriend when he was diagnosed on my birthday. The next day he proposed. So it went boyfriend, fiance, I became his caregiver. The rest, as I say, is history. I went straight into fight or flight, which is a very natural and human response. However, I didn't know how to cope. My tools were somewhere else, and I didn't even know I was going to need them that day. So I couldn't reach, and I didn't know what to grab and what to fall back on. And so when that happens and we start to spiral, for me, it was control that I started to grasp. And as you start to control and you really grip, all these things of, well, I can't attach. I was completely defined by the experience. It swallowed me whole. And it's just kind of one of those things that I hope, when something like this happens in the future, I do better. I hope that there are different choices and, reactions or non-reactions that I can make that would soften the blow a little bit or make me a better partner in the moment. But there's really no rule book for this stuff.
Right.
So we do the best we can in the moment, and I do believe that.
I think we all have different reactions. Some of us go into fight or controlling, others go into flight and kind of eject. I have to get out of here. Some people go into freeze and just become numb and kind of immobilize. So it sounds like your natural tendency was like, okay, I'm going to take care of everything. And obviously, with a cancer diagnosis like this, I'm sure there was so much for you to take care of with him.
My name is Amy Wheeler. I'm the host of the Yoga Therapy Hour, but also the creator of a mobile app that's based on the gunas of yoga and Ayurveda. It's the first of a kind, and we'd love for you to try it for free. The app is called The Optimal State, and it tracks the state of your gunas, and then it gives you therapeutic interventions. Now we're starting to add Dharma Talks as well as Yoga Nidra. And we think these are wonderful ways that you can do some self-care and take care of yourself on a regular basis. So come join us, the Optimal State app. We'd love to see you over there too.
I mean, I'm a fighter. So there's a lot of spice and fire in this DNA. So, that's something that we, try to balance and keep a little cool. But yeah, it's like there was a part of my brain that was like, oh, if there's a 2% chance you can beat this, I'm the woman for the job. I got it. And the problem with that is this whole thing had nothing to do with me. And it became about me in ways I'm not super proud of. There's really nothing superhuman we can do when those things come up. You can try, and I did, and we, went through the whole process of, clinical trials and standard of care. Where do you start? Where do you go from here? And the whole thing. But there's so much of it that's out. It is completely outside of our control, no matter what. And acceptance and surrender and softening, this what's real, looking at thoughts, is this real? Can I do something about this? Or do I just need to like sit in this? And those are the kind of things I've learned on the backside of it is let go. If it's supposed to go, it needs to go. I think with this experience, I kind of had a can of gasoline in one hand and a match in another. The book, as you know, it's not about him. He's
Right.
certainly a, he's got a little main character energy in some points of it, of course, but like it's really about who I was before and how I chose to move through after. And what you alluded to is right. We have a choice. We can fight, we can flee, we can freeze. And, you know, some of it's a knee-jerk reaction that we don't think we have a choice of, but we really do get to choose. And that choice does change the legacy and the trajectory we leave, you know, behind as we move on. So taking a moment, taking a breath before you make a choice is so important, especially when times get real tough.
It can be so traumatizing to hear those words for yourself or your loved ones. I think it does just send our nervous system into its habitual patterns. And as you've said, the gift of yoga is that we can pause, step back, reflect, maybe use our prefrontal cortex to make a decision.
Yeah.
I also love what you said about maybe you didn't handle it so well. And even if we don't handle it the way that we would like to be able to look back and be kind and compassionate to ourselves. I felt you were that in the book, that even though you knew you had gone into this kind of more controlling area, you also now are able to look back and be gentle with Alex A or Alex 1 versus Alex 2, you know, the pre and post Alex, and be gentle with her as you move forward in a different way.
Yeah. You know, threading yoga back into the aftermath, really, yoga just became my primary form of exercise in my late 20s. And I was doing hot power yoga, and it's like, oh, if I can, I'll just beat it out on the mat. And when you're young, that works to a certain extent. You know, you can do it. Get in a hot room, chaturanga, your brains out. You feel great. It looked great. It felt great. I loved it. I loved the community. I was very addicted to it, you know, as most people do get addicted to that practice. And it was during this season that my power and my ability to do those things just disappeared. You know, I couldn't, chaturanga, are you kidding? I can barely stand up, you know? But I was given this really interesting permission slip by one of the teachers. The yoga studio was the first place I went after we got discharged from the hospital. And, you know, I had my ring on and I walk in the door and I'm shaky and she's looking at me and she's like, oh my gosh, look at your ring, you're engaged. And I just burst into tears and said, he's dying. And she never hugged me. She never touched me. She never pitied me. She gave me the best response I think anybody could have given. And she empowered. She said, this place is your home. If you do nothing else, keep coming. Whether you lay there and flop around like Free Willy, whether you do every chaturanga, whether it's power, you lay, you know, just roll up into a ball and cry. Just keep coming. This is your home. And nobody had ever given me that permission in a yoga studio or anywhere else, by the way. I mean, I've been an entrepreneur since I was 25. You sure as heck can't do that in the workplace. What rooms can you walk in any way, shape, or form you are just to be? And it's really yoga. I can't think of another answer. And so I did. I kept going. And my house was totally like hijacked by cancer and sadness. And the studio was around the corner. I just made a commitment. I went almost every day. And so my relationship with the practice really changed because the softer side had to show up. If I didn't let it show up, there was no point in going. You know, it was just, I didn't have it in me to do the tough stuff. But just by showing up and feeling like I could go into a room and really like let it go, let it be, sit with it, I think aided in my path forward in so many really meaningful ways. I do think it also turned on a light bulb that I had 6 or so weeks after the diagnosis that my life was in the process of falling apart. And I saw it and I knew it. I admitted it. I knew we weren't going to get married. I knew it wasn't going to be okay. I knew there was going to be a long period where I wasn't going to be okay either. And that moment is equal parts wonderful to have the awareness. I'm really grateful for it, but gut-wrenching because you're like, now I have a front row seat to watching it all burn down. And that's another thing I think so many people can relate to, whether you knew it in the moment or you knew it later, the life you were accustomed to, familiar with, that was yours, and maybe you really liked it, or there wasn't anything like really wrong with it, is going. And the question is, can you let it burn so you can enjoy the bounty on the other side? And that's
okay. We have to back up though. Was it an intuitive knowing, or how did you know?
I just knew. So my fiance was on bed rest or close to bed rest. We were in the process of standard of care, which was just brutal. And we were kind of toward the end of it. And he was sleeping a lot and certainly not thriving. And my dog, who was about 14 at the time, was put on bed rest. So everybody except me in the house had a neurologist. And Alfie needed to go outside. So I carried this little creature down to this little patch of grass behind my condo building, stopped at the neighbor's house, made a margarita, sat on this like tiny wrought iron fence, and just watched like this thing I love the most hobble around, knowing the person I love the most is upstairs, you know, kind of fighting for his life. And I just knew there's not going to be a point in my life where it's ever this bad. It's never going to be this bad. And so I just kind of knew. It didn't mean I let go any easier. I didn't. I was like, so let's try to fix it. I wasn't fully ready to surrender, but I was aware.
Yeah. And so as it started to crumble and the pieces started to fall, during that time, could you let go into it? Or was it only after looking back at that experience that you realized, wow, I really actually need to figure out how to let go?
I think I went through about a 5-year burn period. And I think I probably could have cut that time in half or more had I been more willing to surrender. But I wasn't. And hopefully in the future I will be, because good grief, we don't need to sit on the bench of our lives for 5 years. That is not what we're here to do. And it also needed time. There is no fast track. There is no, oh, okay, well, I'm going to let go and it's only going to take 5 months versus 5 years. I mean, that really doesn't exist. Either it's going to take however long it's going to take, but you can certainly delay your own process by refusing to let go. And I think that was a lot of what I was going through. I let go of the relationship, but I didn't want to let go of my life in Chicago. And that was the part that took longer. And I needed to, obviously. I mean, I was called to move to California, and it took me about a year and a half to figure that out.
When it comes to surrender, like, there were no words that any teacher or any book could tell me to help me figure out how to do it. Like, it's a precognitive thing. It's a cellular thing. It isn't like we can decide, oh, I'm not going to be controlling now and I'm going to let go into my life. I can't explain what happens to us cellularly or intuitively. But do you have any thoughts about that? Was there anything that helped you finally say, okay, I'm not in control and I have to surrender to this?
You know, I think a couple things ring true. When the student is ready, the teacher appears. And I really, really stand by that. The second piece of that is I did read a book. I read The Surrender Experience later. I mean, this is after I moved. It's by Michael Singer, who wrote The Untethered Soul.
Yeah.
And side note, his journey is phenomenal. And it's as much a business story as anything. I highly recommend the book because he built his life and career. I mean, he's one of the original tech billionaires in the 80s. It's a really fascinating story. But I think I got to the point where I was so tired. I was physically and emotionally exhausted. I just kept pushing. And it was almost like, I'm so tired. I don't think I can push anymore. What if I stopped? What could possibly go wrong? I mean, everything already went wrong. And so you kind of like, you get to the bottom, you stay there for a while, and then somehow the light bulb turns on and you're like, I just have to give up because I'm wiped. I don't know when that moment was, when I was like, okay, things just need to get a little easier, but it did come. I remember, you know, this all went down in the morning of my 33rd birthday. I remember waking up on the morning of my 38th birthday and feeling different. That's why I say it was about 5 years. The whole 5 years wasn't, you know, like I was brought to my knees and it was horrible. I mean, there were certainly joyful moments and I've lived a really lovely life even through my move to California. But I do remember that, like, just feeling like the weights had kind of been lifted and my heart felt a little softer. And I was like, all right, it's going to get better. And that was shortly after, right before he passed. Or right after. Okay. I don't remember.
Around the time.
Yeah. And really it wasn't until he did die that the grief could kind of turn into the freedom of, this doesn't have to be here every day. It did set me free in a lot of ways.
Wow. That's, I just don't have any words.
Yeah.
Think of you suffering like that for 5 years. It's a lot.
Yeah, it is. I will say this, looking back on it, I think what every human being wants, and I will for one moment put words in literally everybody's mouth, I think we want freedom. But I don't think we say that. I think we say, well, we want a bigger house and want to get married and want a little more money. And I want all those things too. like a lot, all of them. And the list is long and I can get very greedy when I let myself go down that rabbit hole. But freedom is at the top. And I do think it's not freedom for ourselves, it's freedom from ourselves. And it's freedom in a way that all these experiences and life-altering moments don't define us, where we aren't like pulled so hard back in. And I think I am a living testament. I mean, I'm talking to you now. I talk to other podcast show hosts. I was on a 6-month book tour. I mean, I have lived this story a million times since it happened. If I hadn't set myself free before doing all that, which takes a whole lot of work, it would come up in my body every single time I talk about it. I wouldn't be able to do it. It would debilitate me. It would take me out. And I think that's really important for people to know. We've already established life is going to come for you. It's not if, it's when. Get in your practice, establish this devotional work that can create equanimity in your life. Just take my word for it. You know, if you haven't experienced your 2x4 moment yet, just get in this practice. It's going to serve you greatly. But as you start to go through and you get knocked down and you got to dust yourself off and you got to keep going through the life, just keep remembering that freedom does exist on the other side. Freedom gets held up when we get in hamster wheels of complacency, when we get sucked into obligation, when we're living for somebody else and not ourselves. That just keeps us further and further away from this freedom that exists. And the true freedom is really, what am I doing here? Are we dropped into purpose? Are we living according to, you know, our gifts and our, you know, dharma, if you want to use a yogic term for it? Why are we here? It can take years to establish that. And I feel really lucky that this entire experience didn't just drop, it drop kicked me into my purpose.
I love what you're saying, that, you know, we may think freedom comes from having a lot of money so we don't have financial concerns. And I'm not saying that being financially provided for isn't a basic human need and it really sucks to be poor, right? I'm just saying we have this idea that more money or a bigger house or a certain kind of partner is going to give us the freedom to finally live the life we want. And I found just the opposite, that actually that is more entangled with more responsibilities and more ways to uphold our image and our ego, and that it's actually, as you said, living simply within your dharmic path. So when these 2x4s smack us, we're already where we want to be, and we have enough of the foundation to deal with what comes at us.
I truly believe we're not immune to the 2x4 moments, but I certainly think we can spare ourselves a lot of the grief. And what I mean by that is I think there's a lot of communication that goes on in our lives, you know, and I believe in angel communication. So we'll just call them angels for the purposes of this conversation. And I truly believe that there were many, many times where I was tapped, hey, you're going this direction and you need to take a quarter turn over here. Like you're missing it. And the problem with this all is it's very subtle. And hats off to the people who can drop into this quiet space and really listen. You know, if prayer is your communication outward to God, then meditation is your listening. We have horrible listening skills as humans. I'm at the top of that list. But if we can tap in and listen, I do believe we're going to get gently redirected. But when we don't listen, or in my case, I'm like, I kind of hear you, but I'm really busy. And you just blatantly ignore it. That's when the beam comes a lot heavier. It's like, well, we tried and you didn't listen. You know, another reason why I'm like, okay, drop into whatever practice. And by the way, there's like 8 million life coaches out here who can help you find your practice. That's not me. That's not my work. But when you do, it's going to help your mind slow down a little bit. So you're able to hear and you're able to feel, you know, intuitively what's right or wrong. And I'm no expert at it. I still practice it every day myself. But once you can get into that space and it's like, oh, there's a subtle redirect and I'm just going to follow it, you can start to track like, oh, things could have gone real sideways for me if I didn't. And you pay attention.
Yeah. What would you say? And I know you talked a little bit about this in the book. I think a lot of yoga people who don't have a lot of money think, well, if I had a little more privilege or if I had a little more financial stability, of course I could have more choice and I could listen to those angels and take the quarter turn. But I'm in survival mode. I just got to go. I got to take the jobs and work as hard as I can. And it makes it very hard to be present to your life. Do you have any thoughts or advice for the people who might be suffering in that direction?
You know, being a full-time yoga teacher, we can just take that profession as a sidebar, is challenging work. And it's one of these industries that are so poorly compensated for and poorly monetized that we have such a big gap to fill. So I'm on one end of it. I'm the business owner. This is my second business. So I understand the business side. I know what they should be making, but you're only worth what people will pay. And there is this sort of global idea that yoga should be free. And the interesting part about that is yoga was supposed to be free. That's how it was originated. Mm. And way, way, way back when, yoga was a dialogue between two people, student to teacher. And then the student becomes teacher. It's like coffee. Imagine you and I go get coffee and I'm like, that'll be $500. You're like, what? We sat and had coffee. It was a latte, you know? That was how this business was created. Now, what happened over time, Westerners discovered it. Wow, we love this. We brought it to America and we infused some capitalism into it. And we made it a commodity. There's nothing wrong with that, but there are deep roots to heal in this industry that will allow more abundance to be spent in it. I don't know exactly the answer to it. I mean, I own a yoga studio, and the hill I will die on is, how do we make this profitable? How do we make these teachers earn reasonable livings? How many people say yoga saved my life? I hear it all the time. I'm like, well, yoga saved your life. Why are you balking about paying $40 for a class? I can tell you it's cheaper than an ER stay when things really go bad for you. And for whatever reason, it's just we're energetically, we're not there yet. But I think one of the things, and I know this is a little tangent, not exactly what you asked, but one thing that I wish teachers, I'm assuming you got some teachers in your audience, so let's go here for a second, could realize is it's not just up to the studio owner to spread the gospel and bring the students. The teachers are the sales team. Like, you aren't just showing up for an hour and leading your class. And there's some people that are listening and like, no kidding, lady, I tell everybody to come. And I'm like, till I'm blue in the face. Great, keep doing it. And then go tell some more, or try a different coffee shop or a different nail salon or whatever it is. It's not the reason why studio owners, I think, get so burned out is it because it all falls on them. And I've been there. There's been time, my studio is just over 2 years, where I've literally sat down and been like, what am I doing this for? The business isn't even paying me. So I'm working blood, sweat, and tears so you guys can get paid. You got to meet me somewhere. This has to be yours. And so then how do you create a studio where the teachers feel that sense of ownership and pride in ownership, and you can start to teach them how to be entrepreneurial, because truly they are their own business owners. And some get that and some don't. So the way I run Soul Dive is like a collective. Like, the teachers are going to soon have skin in the game where they will own a piece of this business. And I'm hoping that through like going through that process and teaching them what that looked like, any other startup, people who are on the ground level at startups own a piece of the business. And I hope that that process starts to turn some more light bulbs on that, like, putting up just one Instagram story a week ain't gonna cut it. Like, you gotta hit the ground. Come on, you're the army. Not everyone's showing up for me. I only teach once a week. They're showing up for you, but they don't know unless you go tell them six different times in six different ways. So I do think it is just this collaborative effort. And if we, you know, can somehow align on, you know, moving the needle a little bit with the prices of classes. And I think we're pretty fair. We're $35 a drop in. Just be candid about that. And have studios stop giving it away. Stop doing free. It's like, you got to train the students as much as we need to train the teachers. Like, teachers need to sell it. And the people need to know this is what you're going to be asked to pay for. And it's worth it. Okay. Soapbox right. over.
I want to say something about that before we go back to the original question.
Yeah.
Amen. Amen. I've been a business owner for many, many years. And I try to explain this, that I can't pay you well or keep paying you well if you're not part of the sales force out there. And in the end, have had to shut down businesses because no matter how many times I tried, they didn't feel that was part of their job responsibility. And that's okay, but then we're not going to have a business to work together on.
When I stepped into the yoga scene, I owned a PR company in Chicago for 12 years. So, I served nonprofits as my clients, but I was a for-profit business and I don't feel bad about that. I'm still a for-profit business and all the different businesses that I do. Like, I like money. And somewhere along the lines, being a part of yoga, it was like there was this, maybe I was taught or I was like hearing whispers that that's bad and we shouldn't like money. I'm like, well, I don't like now. I'm like, unsubscribe. Like, we're not here to be poor. I'm not here to be poor. And you're not here to be poor, Amy. I mean, maybe some people do think that that's their path. And it's like, okay, well, then we just might not be aligned. I do think there's a difference between understanding that, like, you can cultivate abundance in your life and then this whole category of what you have to do to get there. And I don't want to discredit that when you're saying, well, some people are truly in survival mode. And this is, look, in business, if we take all the fluffy emotional stuff out of it, which I can go on both sides, I might own a yoga studio, but I'm a businesswoman first. You have to do the things you have to do to get to the place of the things where you get to do them. You get to share, if yoga is your thing or sound healing or whatever it is. What's the one thing everybody's taught in teacher training? What's the one thing, the top thing you're told not to do? Don't quit your job. Don't quit your job. See how it goes. Take it as a side hustle. Build a community. Find the space that you want to share these gifts, before you get to, doing it full time, if you're even called to do it full time. I don't think we have to be in the survival place though forever. I do think with, maybe proper mentorship or guidance, this doesn't have to be something you pay for. There's a lot of people who are willing to mentor where you can get yourself beyond it and out of it and into this place of like, okay, I get to do this. But I also want to throw this reminder out there. You chose to be in the space. When you go to a restaurant and the server is just really crabby, and you're like, hold on a minute. I didn't force you to be here. Why are you being a jerk to me? Like, I'm just trying to have a glass of wine. What's going on here? You picked it, like you chose it. And when we make choices, sometimes we change our mind and we want to choose something else. Okay, great. So unravel from the choice and make a different choice. But when we take ourselves into this spiral, this thought spiral of, oh, I hate it. I don't want to be here. I'm stuck. It's like, okay, well, help me help you in a little bit.
I mean,
But it
it
comes
goes
back to the
back.
practice. It really
Yeah,
does. If you're
it
following
does.
on your practice, I have some non-negotiables in my life right now. If we want to like give some tangible pieces, number one, after years of, falling apart, moving, rebuilding, opening a business, writing a book, doing a book tour, I mean, my body felt the toll of that in ways I felt like a 90-year-old person sometimes. Like my top of my spine would fall out, vertigo, dizziness, fainted on a first date a couple of years ago. That was really embarrassing. I was not well. Once the book tour concluded in November, I mean, I'd rebounded a little bit since the book was out, but I was like, I want to be well. I want to be strong. I'm turning 40 in June. I definitely don't want to look 40. Sorry, vanity clause in there. Like, just, I don't want to feel 40 and I don't want to look 40. And so I had to make some moves. I'm doing less yoga. I'm doing more strength. I hired a trainer, going to Pilates. Even if I don't do all that, if I'm feeling a little cash strapped, I walk 10 to 20,000 steps a day. And you're a Viking woman. I'm sure if you really wanted to, you could
I'm doing
survive
all of it.
that walk too. Like, we can do it. We just have to hold ourselves accountable. And when you do it in a repeated way, I mean, there's emails backlogged from this week because I didn't sacrifice my practices.
That's right. Yep.
I'll get to the email, but it's coming later today. Tomorrow is my admin day, but my mindset stays clear. My sleep is more consistent. It's like enabling me to have superpowers, whereas if I just sat on the computer and grinded, I wouldn't have it. I do think a lot of the things when we feel like our life just isn't going great, if we can get back into the practice and just simplify what we're doing day to day, it doesn't have to be so hard. We've overcomplicated so many things. The state of California loves to overcomplicate how many appointments and, supplements and skin things and we're telling people to do out here. It doesn't have to be so hard.
Yeah, I agree. I was working this morning and I had the choice to work for another hour, which would take me from 6 a.m. till probably 4 p.m., or to get up and lift weights for an hour. And everything just needs to wait. And I'm same as you. I'm mid 50s now. And
I have made such a priority about my own health because we won't be able to keep doing this. I'm the same as you. My body was hurting so badly that I actually don't have a choice but to prioritize my health.
Yeah. And if we don't, as leaders in the wellness space, I mean, people look at us as you're a fraud. You know, like, are you going to get your hair cut from somebody who has a bad hairdo? No. You know, for example, today, if I was like, I'm going to do your hair, I hope everybody would say, no, what's happening? You know, welcome to the community. No, we have to practice what we preach. Well, why would people come through our door? They shouldn't, you know, they should run the other way. So I do feel like that's really important. And also, there is this note, we're told to get ready. You know, our mothers tell us, the Bible tells us, Abraham Hicks, I don't care, you know, whatever you're following, teachers tell us to get ready. I'm going to tell you to get ready. And we're getting ready to be ready to be ready to be ready for all the things we don't even know are coming, good, bad, or indifferent. There's a lot of mental preparedness that we need to go through so that we can hold the abundance and the good things that come forward. Which kind of goes into that whole survival thing. You might be in survival because you're leaky. But when we look at physical strength, you have to get ready to go. Like if you're getting ready to launch, like to get this book out and go on a book tour, I needed to be ready. My body needed to feel good. I needed to dial in my diet. I needed to be like, you know, very clear on how am I going to sustain this practice and this life when I go on the road, when I'm staying with friends, I'm in hotels, I'm visiting my parent, you know, like things can go sideways in a second. How do you stay the course? And I think at this point, getting into more of the strength and the lifting, I am building physical strength and endurance to step into the next piece.
Beautiful. Well, Alex, you are an inspiration. I really hope that people take all of what you've shared with us today as you said, the Bible or you know, it really, I agree with everything you're saying. And it's so important, especially to yoga teachers and yoga therapists who might be listening, to really take heart with all that we're saying. So, what do you have coming up, Alex? I'm going to bring up for those who are watching this live on YouTube, what would you like to share with us that you've just finished a book tour? Is there anything else you'd like to share with us?
I do. So I own a yoga studio in Palm Desert, and I know that everybody around the country comes to the desert once a year, whether you're trying to warm up, play golf, go to Coachella, whatever it is, please stop by Soul Dive Yoga for a class. I'm in a great little location and the studio is beautiful. And I am about to announce, so by the time this airs, I think this will be for public consumption, but I am hosting a retreat in Sicily, August 31st through September 7th. So it's not currently on my website yet, but it will be very soon. So this is like pre-announcement. The space will be limited for that, but I'm really excited to take my community on the road. So I have obviously a great community in the desert that goes to Soul Dive Yoga. I live in San Diego. I built a lovely community here, but I traveled from California to New York on the book tour. So there's a lot of people that have come into the fold that are interested in, you know, this process of soulful alchemy and how do we live with peace, purpose, and presence and also have fun. I mean, I wrote the book for three reasons. Number one, you're not alone. You know, life can make us feel really, really isolated, and we can drop into these, you know, periods where like you don't get it and we push people away. And I've been there. But number two, you have to laugh. And even in moments of like heaviness and heartache, finding the light, just taking a breath and allowing yourself a little bit of joy is so important. And number three, keep going. You have to keep going. There's no way around it. There's no way over it. It's straight through it. And the sooner you can surrender and take one foot and put it in front of the other foot, you will get to the other side faster.
Thank you so much, Alex, for being with us today and sharing your wisdom. And I was just putting on the screen, you can get this book on Amazon. Is there other places that people could get it?
There's a few brick and mortar locations. There's a few in San Diego, a few in Palm Desert, Des Moines, Iowa, but Amazon's probably your best bet. You can also join my email list at soulfulalchemist.com. So I send out a weekly poetic wisdom drop. It's called Into the Deep with Alex. So hop on that. You won't regret it. And on Instagram, it's at Alex Sabag.
Thank you so much for being with us today, and I wish you well going forward, and I'm so happy that you're taking such great care of yourself.
Yeah, thank you, Amy. This is a fun hour. I hope you have a beautiful day.
You too. Thank you, Alex, for being with us today. It was heart-wrenching to hear your story and all that you've gone through. And it was also invigorating and inspirational to see how you came out the other side and where you are now in life. I think it's really hard to share our stories so honestly and so vulnerably. And as many of you know, this is what we're going to be doing in 2025. Every single guest is going to come on and tell their story about how yoga therapy, and Ayurveda have helped them survive some of the most difficult challenges of their life and what it means to have a daily practice that sustains us and supports us. With that said, I want to remind you that at Optimal State, we do have a Monday night community. We meet every single Monday night and cover Yoga Sutra. We do a little bit of asana, a little bit of pranayama, some yoga nidra meditation. And I want you to know that you're all welcome to come and join us on our Monday night community to kind of jumpstart your home practice and begin to prepare that foundation of your life for both the challenging times and also the times that are full of joy. So go to www.theoptimalstate.com and you'll see our Monday night classes. All right, everyone, have a great week. Thanks for being here. Thank you to our guests today. And if you've ever thought about being on the podcast, we would love for you to come and tell your story. This podcast is not just for the famous people or the people who've written a book. This podcast is for everyday people like me and you to tell our stories of health and healing and beyond as yoga therapy, and Ayurveda has helped us. So please feel free to contact me if you have a story you'd like to tell on the podcast about your journey. There would be nothing more pleasant and pleasurable than getting to interview you and have you on the podcast. Don't be shy. You can do it. We're waiting for you to call. Have a great week, everybody. Thank you for listening to the Yoga Therapy Hour. We wish you a wonderful week. We hope that somehow, in a small way, we've contributed to your well-being so that you can go out and share that well-being with others. That's what life is all about, bringing in the goodness through you and then shining it out to the world. We need you more than ever. So let's all get out there, do good, be good, and have a great week.